BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
Five Lives Rugby Union Weekly.
Right, so Danny, got some news for us.
I have some news. I do. I didn't want to do an Ashy, and I'm not trying to make this a big deal, and it's not all about me, but...
But it is.
But yeah, this...
And when
this
you say you don't want to do an Ashy, what do you mean?
Well, when Ashy didn't tell us, he did a whole podcast with us, didn't tell us he was retiring.
How did it go? He did a podcast with us, then an hour later or something, announced he was retiring from rugby.
And he'd filmed multiple things of talking about it and announced it on every other platform apart from the BBC, which he is...
Which has been very good to him.
Podcast host of, yeah. Yes. So...
I have nothing to say on this.
There's nothing to say.
You've got nowhere to go for once. You're cornered.
So, yeah, it's not a massive big deal, but yeah, I've made the decision that I will be retiring from playing for England as of now.
As of today.
So did you make a decision or was the decision made for you?
So yeah, Steve didn't beg me to stay, I'll be honest, when we had a chat, but no. I've been thinking about it. Obviously, the last 12 months has been amazing and I've loved every second of it, but I have been thinking, I can't keep doing this forever. I've got a young family at home that I've spent a lot of time away from and I'm missing out on a lot of stuff. So the time was right.
Right. More on that to come. More on a great weekend of rugby to talk about with Chris Ashton, with the former England nine, Danny Kerr, with Chris Jones on Rugby Union Weekly.
Rugby Union Weekly. From BBC Sport and BBC Radio 5 Live.
So did you speak to Steve?
Yeah, so I spoke to Steve at the end of the World Cup because he was asking a few of the older lads what their plans were, and he didn't want any of the lads at the World Cup to announce anything, or he didn't want people to rule themselves out because he said, you know, you never know. Like, you might change your mind, and he'd obviously like the option to have you still available. Mm. So we had the chat then, and I was like, no, I've got no plans to retire. I still felt like I wanted to give the team a little bit more. Obviously, they had the 100 cap.
When you were talking to him at this point, did you have like a brown envelope with like 10 grand in it?
What do you mean?
So, Steve, I don't feel like... just check that envelope there. I've left you something.
No, I did at the World Cup.
There's only five caps to
say,
go.
I've only got a few left to get to 100. And he was like, oh, okay.
If you just open my bag left pocket, Steve.
Yeah, there is.
Oh, there how is, did that get in there?
Yeah, there's a good amount of cash in there. Actually, there isn't because I'm broke still because of the house. But no, the World Cup, obviously, we had that conversation. I said I wouldn't retire. I'd love to play in another Six Nations, and then during the Six Nations and being away again from home for that long, look, you know, in the past 9 months I think we've been away for about six of them, and you know what it's like with kids at home. You miss out on stuff. They're missing me, you know, when they start to ask, you're not going away again, are you? You know, it's harder every time leaving them, and I also feel like it's the right time for the team to have another nine or another few nines that can come in and show what they can do, because there's some brilliant young lads out there. And I said to Steve, I never want to stand in anyone's way. If the team's better off with other people, younger nines or different nines, then I want the team comes first. So he completely understood the decision. You know, we had a great chat, thanked me for everything we'd done. He just said that I've helped to leave the team in a better place, which I'm really proud of, for playing the tiniest part of that. But I'm really happy and content with 16 years of doing it. And I really do think like this team is going to go on to amazing things. I do believe that. And I feel like the time is now for me to be a supporter rather than a player.
Because you got to 101.
I did.
And you were on 84 for ages, weren't you?
I was, yeah.
I mean, that's a... Yeah, those extra 17 must have all felt brilliant.
Yeah, they, like I said, and I know me and we talked about it on the, when we did the pod about the 100, like I have had times of playing for England where I had so much fun, the times with Ashy and Ben Foden and Ugo and Dylan, we all kind of came in together, but generally the last 17 of them, have they meant more? Yeah, they probably have, because I had spent so much time out having to watch the team, watch all my mates playing for England, doing the thing that I loved the most. So that really hurt. So then I always said, well, if I ever got a chance to get back in, I'm going to cherish every moment. I'm going to make it amazing. And the fact I've now got three kids that can share these memories with, like to go on a World Cup and them to come on the pitch and run out with me in the 100th game. Like, these are moments that, not just for me, that my family can have forever. My mum and dad to watch that, you know, they've meant, it probably means more to me, I think, as I've got older, because there's more people that you want to make proud and more people you can share it with. So the last year has been my favourite time in an England shirt.
Do you think you may have got on that New Zealand tour if you hadn't announced this?
I generally don't know.
But it wasn't as if Steve said to you, you're definitely not coming on tour. So no, you've got to get in there first.
Like, as I said, he didn't beg me to stay, but he didn't also, we didn't talk anything about that. He was just really happy that I'd come to my own decisions. Probably saves him an awkward conversation with me anyway. So I've got no idea if...
I think he likes those conversations, though, to be honest.
Yeah. Obviously, Jack Van Poortvliet's back fit, came back this week. Chuffed for him to see him back after such a long injury. Rafi Quirk playing, Ben Spencer playing so well, Harry Randall. Like, there's... Obviously, Alex Mitchell's made the nine shirt his own. There's some great players there that can take this team wherever they want to take them. And I don't know if Steve would have wanted me still there in New Zealand, but he completely agreed with my decision. And
what do you think the team needs to not only get better, but just keep moving on? Like, we mentioned how bad the Scotland day was for the team.
Yeah.
And then beating a team like Ireland 2 weeks later. How do we stop big swings like that? How do they keep moving it forward?
Yeah, that's obviously the million-dollar question, is how do you consistently play like you did against Ireland and against France? Because I thought in patches of that, and I've stood behind the post for the first two tries of the second half, and I was looking at going, that is the blueprint for me that I think England need to play. Like, quick, fast, physical, direct, power, pace. You know, you've got Marcus linking up with Ben Earl and Ollie Lawrence hitting hard lines, and the French couldn't answer it. They didn't have an answer for it. And I was sat there almost as a fan thinking, firstly, like, is this too quick for me to play in? Maybe that's coming to my mind. But no, I'd still love to be playing, and that's the type of team I think that England need to be. And it's the consistency of that, though. So there isn't the drop-offs where you turn up against Scotland and you're not you in any way, shape or form, which is really hard, I think, a really hard thing to try and explain. Like, you're never going to have this plain sailing trajectory of excellence. So you're not, even though New Zealand don't play well sometimes, but, you know, the best teams in the world, when they don't play well, have still found ways to win. We against Scotland played awfully, but still, look at that game, you go, we should have won that game. Still should have won that game. Still should have found a way to win that game. And I think the next step for this England team is to work out ways of, when things aren't quite perfect, still finding ways to...
Who's like the next, from time of being in there, who do you think's the next lads to put that on their shoulders? Who's like the five lads?
Yeah, so I think, obviously, the man of the moment, Benny Earl, is for me... an England captain for the future, without a shadow of a doubt. I think we gave him a load of stick when he did this article about saying he wants to be the best player in the world. And I was saying, weren't you the lad that I ripped the ball off when you played to Bristol and manhandled you and scored the try? Like, you can't be the best player in the world. But what he's done the last year or so, I think, is incredible. And he is so proud to play for England. He had a pretty awful time with it under Eddie, and you know, when his character got questioned, which is probably the worst thing a coach can question you on. He has the last couple of years has gone, right, I'm going to show everyone. And I think he's the perfect example of someone that has taken his opportunity, but he has gone, right, follow me, lads. I'm going to take this team forward. Look, like, give me the ball. I'll go forward. People run into me. I'm going to whack him. And he's leading by example on and off the field. So him, I think Ollie Lawrence has shown that he is an unbelievable rugby player. I'm going to give props to Alex Mitchell. I think Alex Mitchell in the last 12 months to go from being out of the World Cup squad to not even in the three, to come back in and make the shirt his own. I think he's been incredible. Who else we've got? I think there's people still out. Tom Curry, you know, you think still got people like Tom Curry to come back in. You know, I thought Sam Underhill had a brilliant Six Nations.
George Martin.
George Martin, just one of those guys that you need him on your team. Like, you need someone like him. He just hurts people and hits people and does it again and again and again, and you need one or two of them on in your team. I think he quietly was brilliant.
How was Finn Smith in the camp?
Finn Smith was great, yeah. He full of confidence. Started with his Girona Got Talent performance that he did. What's the film? The quite out film recently that Margot Robbie produced.
Saltburn. Yeah,
Saltburn. Yeah. So yeah, full of confidence. No,
I've not watched that, but it's some dark scenes.
What, he did the dance?
He did the dance. So, but he'd filmed like all the scenes, because there's some interesting scenes in the film. Have you seen the film?
No.
Some very interesting scenes in the film. And he'd done a hell of a production. Like this, right. For a guy who hasn't got a cap yet, done a hell of a production. filmed some of the scenes, you know, dumbed them down a little bit, but then came into the room doing the Saltburn.
Okay, nice.
Naked dance, the murder on the dance floor. And you're like, okay, this guy's got a bit about him. And he did it well. But yeah, he was great. Like, took his opportunity really well. Obviously, with what happened to Marcus, he was on the bench for George. And yeah, full of confidence, full of life. And with him, you know, you got him, George Ford, again, quietly, I think, just had an amazing Six Nations again. Can't seem to win many critics over still, but...
I don't know. I think that's not... I don't think there are many critics. I think there's a habit for teams to take, say, one article from one person and to feel that's representative of a media opinion or a fan base's opinion.
Yeah, maybe.
But it's not true.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
I mean, Ford's got a lot of admirers, not least on this podcast. So I don't know.
I know that you've always been
a massive fan. I think Ford is consistently...
I just don't think he gets the credit. He doesn't get the credit he deserves.
No, he maybe doesn't. But I think most people out there would go, that guy is a serious player.
And he's, especially, I mean, in that, he led the team so well. Whether he's starting or he's not, he's leading that team.
So he's always had that kind of Owen Farrell alongside him, or if it came down, World Cup knockout, push comes to shove, who's going to play?
Yeah.
It would often be Owen who would get that nod. Yeah. So that's probably why the perception of him hasn't been as, you know, maybe...
Do you have to win to get that as well?
Win what? Titles and stuff? Yeah. You mean a club level?
No.
Oh, what, 6 and 8? You mean he's won a Grand Slam as an England 10.
2016?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a long time, isn't it?
Yeah, true. I just think...
To get that level...
I just think there's the reason he... It's like England have had two generational 10s for the last... What, George debuted in 13, 14? The last decade. You know, more in Owen's case. But they're generational 10s, but they're both 10s really by trade, aren't they? So maybe that just impacts slightly.
I think it does.
But his legacy, he's going to be 100 kappa before too long. Kappa. And he could steer this England team in some serious direction.
He could. And you've got the two young Smiths now that be fighting for that jersey off him. But also, you know, when you've had Marcus again linking with George and he came on at 15, that you've got that other dimension of such a serious attacker out wide then you link with Lawrence and you link with Ben Earl and Sladey, I think, again, had a great tournament. So the foundations, I really think, are there, mate, for this team to now go, right.
What's now, it's consistency, and it's to Ashley's earlier point, it's not only delivering performances when your backs are against the wall and everyone's looking at tweets and going, everyone hates you. Because the Ireland game, that team now has respect.
Yeah.
Whether it's from inside England or outside England, the team has respect.
Yeah.
And now it's the challenge to build on that, isn't it?
Yeah. Are you telling them not to listen to Clive?
What do you mean?
To Clive Woodward's comments.
Also, you're
kind of saying that people listen to that. They read it.
Well, obviously the England players, coaches have been using media as a motivational tool.
That's
the
fact is, but I don't think that's true, is it?
Well, it is true, because Ben Earl
used
said
that
it
as motivation.
You know it's true, Ashley.
We did. Yeah, we did. I think,
did
and
you?
I think sometimes in certain
maybe,
occasions,
maybe individually, not as a team.
We know that coaches were showing that came up. Johnny May revealed that there was social media Mondays or something at the World Cup. Ben Earl said he reads everything. It's cool, whatever gets the players and coaches going, but that's not going to work ahead of the New Zealand tour, because everyone's only writing nice things at the moment, or saying nice things. So the best teams deliver, regardless of what people are saying on Twitter or on podcasts or in the papers.
And that's the next step for this England team, is to not have to rely on, you know, the mental side of things, where you are being criticised, you're hearing all this stuff. And let me say, it wasn't by the Ireland players, the current Ireland players, because I think they were incredibly humble, and everyone, I think they're getting a bit of a bad name. Everyone kind of turned into an England fan that weekend.
Yeah, it was strange. For the first time ever.
But it was lovely.
My old man was amazing. I think that's a bit of Celtic jealousy at the Irish system. I think
everybody was sick of Ireland winning all the time. Everyone turned into an England fan, and that felt
for
so
one
nice.
Afternoon,
for once in 16 years.
And then you see that we were watching England France in a bar in Dublin. And everyone's going mad for France winning. So you're like, right, normal. Yeah, it's in Dublin, I suppose, but normal service regime.
Yeah, it's back. But no, we did. We used it as motivation. We definitely did, and it worked. It worked that week. Mm. That won't work every week. And
that's not sustainable.
It's not sustainable. Of course, it's not. And now you're not going to have everybody. You know, there's not going to be that much negative media at the moment, because the boys have played some really good stuff to finish off. But at the end of the day, you look at it, you go, finish third. Like, that isn't good enough for this England team, I don't think. And Steve's big thing was to win the Six Nations, but it was also to go after those two in the top four in the world, in France and
Ireland.
And take one of them out. And we took Ireland out, should have, could have taken France out as well, would have leapt to fourth in the world rankings, but not to be yet. But, you know, what an incredible tour they've got to look forward to with the Japan test against Eddie, and then to go to New Zealand and try and get a win down there, which will be incredibly tough, but I'm backing the boys to go down there and do well.
And just to put a lid on the England chat, I think the reason people are positive at the moment is just how it ended, and the fact that you were in the title shake-up come the final day, which hadn't been the case in 4 years.
Yep.
So for England fans, it's not a case of, oh, the tournament was over before it started. And I think that's why people are really excited. But yeah, as you say, the challenge is to go and do it again.
Who paid David Beckham the cameo fee?
So I don't know. Apparently, Owen Belly, the social media guru, sent him a message and to
his EA.
I don't know, but it got to him and it came through. Do you know, I had some great messages, boys. Jurgen Klopp sent one, which was class, and it wasn't just a congrats, Danny. You know, well done. It was he's watching the Six Nations Full Contact on Netflix. Like, he's loving his rugby.
See us all over him.
Who else? Jimmy Bullard sent a hilarious one which couldn't be aired on social media. So that he replied on Bex's one saying, "Where the F is my video?" Which England deleted straight away. So they deleted his comment. But Curtis Jones, the Liverpool midfielder. So there was obviously all the family ones and stuff. But the best one. And I say the best one is, have you seen the bowling guy that is quite viral? He's an old man now, but there's a clip of him.
Oh, the one that goes,
"Who do you think you are? I am. So yeah. if you haven't seen him before,
that's so good.
You should see him. And it's kind of like a thing in the camp that we love. Like, it's just so, it's so funny. And Elliot Daly does one of the best impressions of him going. But they paid him a cameo. So I think it was $40 that the boys paid him. And because everyone talks about it so much, to actually then see him. But it's the most lazy cameo ever. He's like this, like lying down, just reading this. "Congratulations, Danny. Here, you're a big bowling fan." And at the end he goes, "Who do they think they are? Because you are, and I am." I mean, if you haven't seen this, this is going to be awful. But if you do, have you seen that bowling meme before?
It's awesome. He does bowl a strike incredible. And then just kind of gets loses so carried it. Away. "Who do you think you are?"
That's right. Yeah. So yeah, there was some cool videos, but obviously Beckham's was pretty cool. It was pretty cool.
Do you think if you walk by David Beckham in the street, he'd recognise you?
No. I have met him once. I met him at your favourite place, Soho Farmhouse.
But he probably doesn't look at many people in the eye.
No, he's head down.
I suppose if you're at that level of fame, it's quite hard to...
Don't give anyone any eye contact.
To know whether they're like a family member or a member of the public. Yeah. Or
I'm sure he's done a lot of videos to a lot of people before, so...
You're the same room where you live, no, Jonesy? Head down.
I'm going to go on to this message. This is funny. Theo Tan... Theo said, he said this before Danny's 100th cap, so been meaning to read this out for a while and I kept forgetting. Anyway, he said, Danny might make his 100th cap. It's been and done now, Theo. He's been on the scene quite a while. When I was about 12 or 13, I asked Danny to sign something for me. That was 15 years ago, 2009. He came to Roslyn Park, did a little speech, nice guy. He signed a roll of bread for me.
Wow.
I've still got it.
He's still got the roll of bread.
There it is.
Was it kept in a glass jar?
Where's it? The freezer.
Why
freezer
job?
He's still got it. He says, if anyone wants to buy this roll of bread, they can. DM me. Must be worth thousands. I've still got it. It's not rotten. And you can see it.
Let's see the autograph.
It's worrying that it's not rotten.
Yeah, no, that is. Yeah. Fair play.
But I think bread just stays
hard,
doesn't
it?
Theo
Dan, was that?
Theo Dan. It's Theo Tan. But he would be about Theo Dan's so be a bit earlier. Theo Tan is going to be a bit older than Theo Dan. But anyway.
Decent bit of memorabilia.
Do you remember signing that?
I do remember signing that piece of bread thinking.
It's more a baguette, isn't it?
Strange. But there we go. I didn't know he'd keep it.
Have you got any loose ends to tie up from us for England? Any groups you need to just jump out of?
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
I've done a few of them.
Yeah, I'm currently...
Did you even get into the WhatsApp group of like Sale, Harlequins, Worcester?
Yeah, but it's more team managers.
Right.
I also got exited from a few. By team managers.
By team managers, okay.
You got the sighting commissioners from all of them, didn't you?
Oh, I was speaking to one actually on the weekend.
Right.
One of them wants to come on.
Nice.
Yeah. He's keen to do a bit with us.
Yeah. But no, I haven't left the WhatsApp group yet. Right. So I told all the lads knew before the France game that it was going to be my last one. So
all the best and slide out or not?
Yeah. Yeah. It is quite sad. I am sad, lads. I am generally sad that I'm very happy in a way that I've got to do it kind of on my own terms and I had the last 9 months that I had. If I'd have just never got back in and now everyone would just be like, well, he is retired anyway. Do you know what I mean? So to be able to kind of call it yourself, I'm really happy and content with. But I am sad that I'll never get that feeling again because I can't describe it. It's the best feeling.
If you had to name someone who's been the best either staff or person throughout the years of being in England, who would you go for?
That staff turnover was a lot, wasn't it? Especially when Eddie was involved.
Yeah, backroom staff was always generally the same though, wasn't it?
Yeah, backroom staff. So I think Charlotte, team manager, she's been incredible.
Okay.
She's the work she does. TT, Tom Tomlinson, who's okay. He's the great survivor.
Yeah, he's the only one of Eddie's, I think, who made it all the way through the Eddie regime.
Just ducking and diving.
I don't think there was anyone else who
survived
and thrived.
Tom's just like...
He came under Stuart.
I think the theory goes that he predated and postdated Eddie, which was
maybe
an amazing achievement for a member.
No, he definitely did. But you know what he's like. He's like the nicest person and an absolute fruitcake, but in the best possible way.
Yeah, that's a good shout.
Looks after you. Bob Stewart, physio, who has put so many lads back together. Generally one of the best physios I've ever worked with. You go in there with a bad back, he doesn't touch your back. He does all this magic wizard stuff of breathing and pressure points and stuff, which I was always like, that's complete nonsense. And then I have 5 minutes on a bed with him and my back feels $1 million and he's not got anywhere near it. So
might need to keep hold of his number.
Yeah, back. I will be seeing Bob regularly. But there's loads, the backroom staff, let's be honest, they work so hard and some of them have been through a lot of tough times in that environment. But I think now they're thriving, they're happy. You walk into the physio room, it's a happy place. The doctor's happy, the physios are happy, everyone's happy, which is a lot different to how it has been before. So that's only helping the environment. And I do think Steve has got that environment. And I said it to him when I left, I'm envious that I'm not 5 years younger because I think he's got so many things right there now. And these young lads are so lucky, I think, to have it because it hasn't always been that way, as we well know.
Well, Danny, thanks so much for giving us the retirement exclusive, unlike Ashy.
I can only apologise for that.
We'll get the next moving house exclusive.
Have you moved?
No,
when's the last time you moved house?
I'm not moving house.
Just a bit of banter. Okay, more to come on the pod after this.
My name's Joe Wilkinson, and I'm doing a podcast because I love football. But what I love more is the idea of being friends with a professional footballer. The footballer I'd like to be friends with is Patrick Bamford. Hello, Patrick. Will you be my friend?
That's yet to be decided.
Okay, not what I was hoping.
My Mate's a Footballer is a BBC Sounds podcast with me, Patrick Bamford, and Joe Wilkinson.
If you weren't married, who would your ideal date be?
Julia Roberts.
That was quick. If I was you, I'd have popped a pause in.
Search for My Mate's Footballer on BBC Sounds.
So we'll brush over Tottenham Stadium, yeah?
We can't brush over it. I mean,
who did Sarish play? No one turned up. Just...
Yeah, why did 60,000 people go to watch
a team run?
Yeah. The captain's run sometimes, there's like an open training session, but 60,000, they're probably paying 40 quid each
sometimes
to watch a captain's run, to watch unopposed.
The subs or the extra lads would oppose the team.
But just holding, not proper tackles in the yellow bibs.
Decent.
Sorry, that's definitely hard for me to say, having not played at that level. Yeah, but point remains. One team played, one team turned up, and one team didn't. Mm. And the fact is, like when Marla, you don't often get someone tweeting an apology, do you? Like Marla did.
Roy Keane says they do it all the time.
Who? The United players?
That's what they say they have to do, yeah.
They have
Roy Keane.
Yeah, I think when it becomes... When it happens all the time, it loses its impact. Yeah, but I think when someone does go, look, that was not good enough, I think fans probably do want to see it, as long as there's a positive response along the line.
Yeah, they do deserve... The Quins fans do deserve an apology from us. We've got to give, all the credit to Saracens. I thought they were brilliant. Spoke to you yesterday, didn't we, about it. I've always obviously admired how they play, but always backed us to beat them. I mean, we were awful Saturday.
But you never do beat them, in fact.
We haven't beaten them away from home in 12 years.
Mm. Is that right?
We don't often beat them.
The two games this season have been
routes, yeah.
Yeah, it's like 100 points.
Yeah, we were off it in every department of the game.
Did you know ahead of the game?
No, we generally thought we were going to win. We'd had a good week.
But like, did you feel, you personally, Dom Brandt, Marla, Marcus...
Had enough time. Like,
did you feel jaded? And like, Elliot Daly had a blinder. Ben Earl was good. Clearly, like, Farrell looked incredibly revved from his break.
Right,
yeah. So I'm just trying to see if there's a theme about a post-Six Nations...
Yeah, I don't know.
Jadedness.
We've had we can put it down to that and say a few of us are a bit tired, but they had lads that were tired. I think it was one of those games, and you have them sometimes in your career where you get whacked. And there's been multiple games this year in the Premiership where teams have had that. I think kind of looking back at the game, it was almost the perfect storm for them. Speaking to their boys, they had a lot of emotion flying around that week. It's their big game. It's against us. They don't like us. They wanted to put up a statement. Some lads haven't played for ages. Faz was itching to get out there and show people what he's all about.
250th.
Finish well, his 250th. We generally thought we'd had a good week. We thought we were prepped, but we were bang away from it in every facet of the game. Spoke to Jamie after the game, spoke to a few of their boys, and they were like, we were sat on the bench going, wow, everything's clicking, we look good. Quins don't look very good, this could be a big one. And it turned into an embarrassing day for us. And a lot of questions are being asked about us, and which is absolutely warranted, and we've got to go out there on Saturday, and it's the beauty of the Premiership. We've got another great team coming to play us, and we've got to right the wrongs and show what we're all about.
Sarries looked like they'd used the break really well. I think they were always going to, because the way they went into it, probably, I think there was a bit more pressure on them to come out of it, the right side of it. They were a bit hit and miss going into it. There's a lot going on.
Weren't they? Yeah,
they've come out of it. It seems like there's a lot more clarity knocking around of where they're going to be next year, personnel leaving or staying. But the thing that I noticed sat there was they've had a few injuries too. But now the bench is looking like pretty strong again. On the bench the weekend was George, Mowi, Riccione, Ezekwe, Willis, Christie, Alex Goode.
Is that full international bench?
But as the apart from Simpson, the scrum half, Bozoski's injured. Like, they're coming back.
Yeah, Maui's wicked, isn't he?
They are strong.
Boys, they're two Argentinians, like Gonzalez is generally one of the best players.
That's canny recruitment. Unbelievable recruitment. No one's going like, oh, you've got to sign Gonzalez and Cinti.
No, they obviously picked them up from London Irish, whatever happened to them, but I think Nick Kennedy's in charge of their... And mate, apparently the chat goes that they got them for an absolute steal as well, but... That Gonzalez is one of the best players I've ever played against. Like, on a pitch, he was incredible.
Maro didn't play.
No, Maro didn't. Theo McFarland is like a joke. You look at their squad and you go, wow, like they've got that seems like Sarri's from years ago. But they're managing to do it. But then they're also playing.
But that's the environment improving. That's the environment 100%. Improving the players, isn't it? Because 100%. You know they had the salary cap. It happened, but these are players who you wouldn't have gone, oh, wow, they've signed a superstar. They've kind of just made them better, haven't they?
Exactly. And, you know, you look at, I think Nick Tompkins, you know, he's had probably a fairly tough time of it in the last eight weeks of Wales, but put him in a Saracens shirt and he was up there with one of the best players on the pitch. Like we have to say full credit to them. They fully deserve to do what they did to us. It's embarrassing for us, but for them, I come off the pitch thinking, I didn't think the English teams could compete with the French teams over what's happened the last couple of years. But coming off that game, I look at Sarri's now and I go, wow, I think they could beat anyone on their day now.
The Bordeaux game's going to be interesting.
Does Bordeaux away feel a step too far?
Well, that's the one, you know, speaking to the lads, obviously, while we've been in camp, they got a battering out there.
Yeah.
But they're confident.
I think they're going to turn them over.
They're confident they can go there and turn them over.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be a statement win, and I think it's, you know, Renan Ogara, who obviously, you know, one of the, you know, most insightful voices in the game, was kind of lamenting or labelling the end of the Saracens dynasty. So maybe that's struck a chord a bit if they're being written off. That
he was talked about with England as well. It was a similar thing.
I said this to Ben Earl. I do love it though, because it's just the pundit circle of life.
Of course it is.
Ben Earl, he's a spiky character, and give him a microphone in 10, 15 years' time, I'm sure he'll be, you know, throwing some grenades. That's just how it works. And Ogara, Heaslip, they're the kind of competitors that if they were getting it, they'd be using it as motivation.
Exactly.
And then they've been there, done it, and won it, so they can say what they like, I suppose. No, I thought Daly's a good example as well. When he plays for England, he always looks neat, tidy, effective, efficient. Then you put him just into a club environment, he looks world class, and he's always been world class in terms of what he can do internationally. But he oozes class in that, you know, runs with the ball more, clean line breaks, creating, playing at fullbacks, getting his hands on the ball.
I think that's the key one. He loves playing fullback. I think that's where he feels like he's at his best.
He'd still like to play there for England, do you think?
I think he'd love to. Yeah, he'd love to. But he's so good at playing everywhere that he's probably got typecasted a little bit into that role where he can be on the wing, he can be 13, he can be 15. But yeah, he played well. Well done, Les.
Thoughts on the TMO stuff, Ashy? So for those who weren't aware, Stefan Lavis comes in on Farrell off the ball before the Cinti try. I think it was the Cinti try.
Yeah, Gonzalez, I think.
Or the Gonzalez try, yeah.
Then I got binned.
You got binned for persistent infringement.
I got binned for not being 10, which I'd like to know this rule.
You were nowhere near 10.
But if the scrum half travels, how many metres can I
tackle
him?
4, I reckon he went.
No, he didn't.
He did, mate.
He went 5.
He went 5, max.
Well, apparently that's the rule, though, isn't it? If a scrum half takes it 5 metres, you can tackle him.
Really?
Yeah, I didn't know that. I've been trying to get people done for 15 years, trying to like...
Oh, I can't believe he gave you...
Every time I take a quick tap, if they're not 10.
Regardless, the point is...
Well, regardless is... Steph Lavis reckons he was getting a red, but so he reckoned my yellow helped him.
Right. So he was getting a red for a second yellow or a straight red?
Straight, a second yellow, he thinks.
For what he did to Farrell?
Yeah, but I didn't even see what he did. What did he do?
Just a late hit, a bit high.
And way off the ball, yeah.
But that's not the ridiculous bit.
Yeah.
So the bit is that obviously still, I mean, Hugo and I had a chat about this in 2017, how TMOs need to have their own pictures and their own ability to slice up their pictures and not be reliant on the TV. Because if they're reliant on the TV director for pictures, they're obviously going to be hearing the commentary, and then the commentary is going to affect them.
That's mad, though, isn't it? How did we never? I never knew this was a thing.
But I thought it's always been the case. But if they're sitting in the same truck, what happens in the international game at the World Cup, for example? The TMOs are way away from the TV. They have their own pictures. And they,
no commentary.
No, in some cases, they have like their own producer. So they can say, can I... But if they're reliant on the TV director, the host broadcaster, and it is a problem because then you go to a host broadcaster, you might not be able to work very well with that host broadcaster. You might be, you know, parochial. I'm not saying that happens in an English club game, but a big European game. It's just fraught with... It's fraught with problems, isn't it?
What was his... Is it his ego that he didn't want to let Austin
I think there's probably a bit of that. I think you're slightly damned if you do and damned if you don't. Because, I mean, Austin Healey's so sharp in his co-coms, but he is one who will be pointing out a lot of... Some will not point out as many official lapses or officiating issues as Austin does. That's just his... You know, he sees a lot.
So the TMO heard Austin say they need to look at something.
Yes,
here.
And then he kind of felt that... He didn't want to be guided by Austin. No,
that's exactly what you said. But it came through so to the TV.
Yeah, he was worried about the optics rather than actually...
Did he realise? He was coming through live to the TV going, nah, I'm not doing it. Austin's picked it up. But foul play, it doesn't matter.
Well, this is the thing. I think you are a bit damned if you do and damned if you don't, because if you react to everything the COCOM says,
people will look at everything.
Yeah, you look at everything, because some summarisers will pick up a lot more than
others. Well, you can look at any rook and one of the pundits go, oh, that looks like head-on-head.
Yeah.
And any you could check.
And how many head-on-heads don't get picked up in a game? Yeah, a fair few. It's a little bit of kind of...
And then they...
10 cars are speeding, only 5 might get caught.
When Faz was kicking, the TV then, after it, put it back on again, and Timo was still live, and he's going, no, don't put it on again.
It's a terrible look, and it doesn't look good at all. But unless there's going to be real investment into like getting the TMO trained to manage their own pictures, or to have someone with or they take pictures that aren't reliant on the TV. That's the problem. They're reliant on the TV for their pictures.
Surely they just don't listen to the commentary.
Yeah, just turn it off.
No, but if they're sitting in the truck, the commentary is going to be on.
A lot of people do on Austin.
Well, they need to then
wear...
There's
a volume button.
Or they need to be wearing headphones blocking out the noise of the truck or whatever.
Ear defenders,
like when you take your kids to rugby, yeah. I don't know.
It's not a good look.
There are solutions, but I think it obviously is something that still happens, which we did think wasn't the case much anymore.
Okay.
And then they say they cut the commentary for any contentious issues, but they're still going to hear things like that. So it's not ideal, is it? We'll see what comes of it.
Should we move on to a different game?
Yes. So I just wanted to pick out a few highlights because I thought it was a brilliant weekend, and you keep getting reminded, don't you, about what a great league this is, even with all the problems it's had. I mean, Gloucester winning at Leicester. Yeah. Not sure how many people called that. I want to big up Stephen Varney. He's gone and had a blinder for Italy.
Class.
Scored a try against Scotland, and then he's gone and scored that try, which, I mean...
Is his dad still texting you?
Well, I think his dad sometimes DMs me, called Reg. And he's like,
why are you giving us some more love?
No, he did. He DM'd me and gone like, he said for a while now, you need to talk more about Italy. And he's right. He's like, Italy are coming. Then I put a post out saying, what a month for Stephen Varney. Kind of gave like a thumbs up.
Brilliant.
But I think he's a bit of a legend. Anyway.
Just quietly, that took some scoring. Like
what
that,
a try.
He was like, he looked quick in the last minute of the game to speed through step, try. Like, and it just came from a little bit of loose play and a couple of offloads.
So that was a wicked win for Gloucester.
What about Zach Mercer?
Yeah, he played all right again.
Yeah. Absolutely ridiculous. Blake's made like 12 breaks.
Now you're retired. Has Steve Borthwick burnt bridges there, Mercer? Because he gave that interview saying he's kind of done with England. I'm going to focus on Gloucester. He came back, signed from Montpellier, where he was tearing it up, to come back to Gloucester, kind of to get in the World Cup squad. Lasts a couple of weeks in camp, gets pinned off. You'd have been there with him.
Yeah.
Before you answer, you know you get... some lads that just train a certain way.
So do you think he may have given off those vibes in training? Right? Danny can tell us.
Yeah, you answer that. But that's what it appears. Maybe just give him a go.
Yeah, I'll be honest. I've got no idea the relationship there between Zach and
But you've
and
not
Steve.
Heard anything to suggest that England...
No.
What was it like in camp between
like,
them?
Right? Yeah, he was fine. Like, he came in, he trained hard. I do think Zach's the type of player that you're gonna see a lot more from in games than you are in training.
Yeah, because seems that
he thrives in that full contact and yeah. him getting the ball in open space, which in training, like, yeah, you're not gonna get. So, do I think
in training he's not gonna run to a ruck, pick a ball up willy nilly and just start like beating people like he does on the weekend?
No, he's not.
He's just not going to do it.
He's not. And he, you know, in France, he did that for years, and that's why he was their best player 50, of the year.
52.
Yeah, he's incredibly skillful. He's got everything. I just think, yeah, some players you do see that in training you don't quite see it, and then it comes to a game, you're like, wow, like that guy's special. And is there room for him somewhere in that England?
Has to be.
Pack or squad? I think you'd have to say you hope so. You do hope so, but it's in a very competitive area, that back row. And Ben Earl is kind of nailed on now in that position.
But he's a seven by trade, isn't he? He's playing seven for Sarries. He'll play seven all the running, assuming Billy stays fit.
But he plays seven for Sarries, but he's off the back of the scrum. They swap him around. So he's kind of like.
But he's got a heavy duty eight alongside him in Billy, isn't he?
But he played all right with eight with unders and
no, of course he did.
George
yeah.
Martin or Ollie Chesham. Tough.
Just some of the stuff he's done past few weekends is like, we ain't got an eight like that knocking around.
He's different to the other ones. You obviously got Don Brandt, you got Cunningham South, who are different back rowers again. I suppose it depends the way this team wants to go forward is can they make room for him?
Well, let's take what happened to you then. Do you think Zach can pull it back with Steve?
Yeah. I think.
And by that you mean you burn your bridges with Eddie.
Colin Caterpillar cake, will that work with Steve, do you reckon?
Hopefully it doesn't take him as long as it did with me with Eddie.
So it took you 4 years.
It took me 4 years.
It's only because you're still playing at 37. Yeah,
I don't think Zach has. I don't know what's gone on behind the scenes as to why he's not getting picked. I'm sure that's only what Zach and Steve know that, but you'd say that if he keeps playing like that, you'd hope for his sake that at some point there's going to be another opportunity for him to wear that shirt. Because I know from speaking to him how desperate he is.
A couple of games to look out for this weekend. Northampton, Sarries Friday night. After Northampton took 50 at Bristol and Sarries got put 50 on Quins. So that's huge. This run-in, I know that with the shortened league and everything and there'll be a lot of clubs wishing they had more money on the gate and more players playing through the Six Nations. But it does feel that now, every game, every weekend, just has so much on
it. It's not a time to be losing lads like Alex Mitchell. And this is the time you need everybody flying.
So then it goes to the point about really managing your Six Nations players, doesn't it? Do you want a Six Nations player who's going to be 6 out of 10? Or do you give them a week here, a week there, get them at 8 out of 10? Because Northampton rested a fair few of their guys on Friday, didn't they?
They did. And now
they might get them back Friday night home to say, they go, look, have your week, come back, beat Sarries on the Friday night. That's just that squad management that's massive for a DOR. Because the temptation when you've not seen someone for 8 weeks is to go, we're getting every single minute we can out of you.
100%. And you could see, I think Marrow potentially could have played for Saracens this week, but didn't. Every club's going to be different. We talked about this, about managing the players and managing the running, and there is massive game after massive game coming up the next 2 months. Obviously, we've dropped one this week. We can't afford to drop another. Suddenly, you're looking up and you're going, wow, like, how are we going to get anywhere near this top four?
Like, Leicester losing that, it looks like...
Sale.
It's tough.
Sale. You've got now Leicester, Sale, 35, 32, Bristol, 35. You're 37. Yeah, and then...
You win two games in a row, you suddenly...
Well, we thought Sarries were struggling and they just go and get a 5 points.
Sarries will be, yeah.
They'll be all right, won't they?
They'll be all right.
The key is for someone to try and get Sarries at home. No one will go and win on that pitch.
No.
That's the key is for all these teams, is to try and keep Sarries at the top two. Can Bath do that? You got them on Saturday. I thought that was great. I wasn't at the rec, watched it on telly, but just... Wrecking the sunshine, two good teams, loads of internationals, competitive match.
Yeah.
It's a good advert for the league, that was.
I thought it was. I think you had, I think Craig Dawes said it, you know, where else would you rather be? You're at the rec, 3 o'clock Sunday, sun shining. Manu Tulang is doing outside breaks, scoring tries again. Bath found their way back into games, which they just keep doing, keep finding ways to win. Ben Spencer's try-saving tackle.
Are we allowed to talk about Ben Spencer on the pod now?
Well, you can talk up whoever you want now, mate. I know one of the people, you know, we've talked about people trying to retire. You've been trying to retire. This should be a big day for you.
No, it's not.
Should we get a cake?
I'm not celebrating anything. Yeah. I just feel in my role, I have responsibility to be objective. And
yeah.
Ben Spencer's been one of the best nines in the league for a while. And it was good to see him get recognised during the Six Nations.
Yeah.
So you've been one of the best leagues in one of the best nines in the league for a long, long time.
Thank you, Chris.
I'm just talking short term.
But no, they've got some players that are peaking and playing incredibly well. That back line, spending some time with Will Muir in the England camp. What a player he is. Like Ben Spencer puts the ball on the money every single time, but you got to go and get it. And Will Muir goes and gets it. Joe Cocker-Singer goes and gets it. And you've got Finn Russ and Ollie Lawrence knocking about.
Finn
Ted Hill back fit.
It looked like Finn had a point to prove. You know, post the Six Nations, Scotland dropped off again. He dropped his first ever goal. I just wonder
left
if he...
Left foot as well.
Left foot.
He's been talked into that, hasn't he?
He's been a bit... Yeah, but I wonder if Finn has a part of him that does want to prove he can win, take a team to a title.
Well, has to be, surely.
Yeah. And I just
well,
think...
Well, what's he... Because he, not with disrespect, but he... Winning titles. How many titles has he won?
He won a Pro 12/14 with Glasgow in 2015.
Yeah.
Then
so
a few near misses with Racing.
Yeah.
Of course, he's always going to want to take his team to the title. But in the way Scotland finished, questions over their game management. I don't know. I'd look to me as if Finn just had this kind of steely determination to show that he can do it all.
Yeah. And I think he wants to be the best player in the world. He's happy with that tag. He wants that tag. Like, if you're going to be the best player in the world, you're going to get judged, I think, at the end on trophies, surely. So I'm sure, you know, looking back at the end of your career, you look back and you go, how many things have I won? And is there pressure on him? Of course there's pressure on him. He's the highest paid player in the league. There has to be pressure on him. He's playing really well, but yeah, I'm sure he's thinking, right, let me take Bath to a final and let me get him over the line.
I think they still let too many points in at the moment.
I think they're still probably just off. But aside from Saracens...
They're letting teams in the game too long. Just...
Okay, but just quickly then, Ashley, if we assume Saracens will make top four, who are the other three?
Saints, Bath.
Saints, Bath, okay.
Last one, I don't know. Quinn, you're still...
It's that all these teams are out of it.
It's all to play for.
And Exeter is such a new Exeter side, it's hard to say that only Saracens you feel have the kind of body of work.
I think the final will be Saints, Saracens.
Saints, Saracens final for you, interesting. I've got to say also, I did say I watched the Bath game on the telly. I did, but then went out with my wife and daughter for the last 20 minutes, listened to our brilliant commentary on 5 Live with Claire Thomas and Paul Grayson. So a shout out for that. Right, a couple of bits to finish, guys. This is from Callum. And Callum says, hi, Chris. Hope you and the RUW team are well. I had a slightly silly idea for a debate, and it came to me while listening to the pod referencing Sam Warburton saying Ireland was still the best team in the world. Similar to boxing, I would love it if teams or unions could call out other teams for a test match or a one-off test or a 3-test series. For example, the box could call out Ireland, trash talk, animosity, what's not to like? And Callum says a shout out to his girlfriend Alice, long-suffering England fan, who was sat with him and his Scotland supporting family in the East Stand at Murrayfield. So he said he sent that a couple of weeks before. Georgia actually did call out Wales. Did you see that?
Yeah.
Georgia won Rugby Europe and they did actually call out Wales and put a clip of them winning in Cardiff. Obviously, then a lot of Wales fans came back and said, well, at the World Cup, Wales won by 40. But the idea can't really work. You need to kind of plan
logistics
and ticket sales and everything. But it's a nice concept, isn't it?
Richard Cockle ain't bothered about that, is he?
No, but the logistics.
He'd have him on the Parker. He's not bothered.
He's like, just let us at him. But then the Welsh wrote back saying, watch this space or we'll be in touch. So
nice.
Maybe that's a cop-out, I think, in my mind.
I don't know.
It's like you've got to give them something back because they're getting pushed into it.
We'll try our best, lads, but sorry.
We've got South Africa, New Zealand, Australia coming to town and we're not going to Tbilisi. But
maybe they should just leave a week window in every global calendar.
One week window
call someone out.
Calling out.
Who would win right now?
Do you know what? It depends where it is. In Tbilisi, I think George would win.
I'd love to see that.
I think you're right, yeah.
But it's just because we don't have evidence of this Welsh team. You know, winning, losing. Look at the Scottish women's team. They've just strung together such a run of wins. They're winning tight games. Winning's a habit, losing's a habit. You'd feel Wales are on one side, Georgia on the other side.
A lot of pressure if they went there now.
Well, this is kind of stuff.
Make the game happen. He put 10 million on the line for one of the teams. Make the game happen.
I've told you before about the 2017, the unofficial Six Nations test we had against Georgia, didn't we? At our training ground.
In Oxford?
No, it was at Latimer Court in London, Hammersmith.
Where you got in a fight?
Well, no, where Georgia came to train against us.
And you got in a fight?
I didn't get in a fight.
No, the forwards got in a fight.
The forwards got...
I swear that was the Battle of Oxford, bloodbath in Oxford.
No. There was one in... where is it? Hammersmith.
Yeah.
Where we rocked up and like these absolute monsters were getting off the bus, like one after the other, headphones on, like we were all battered from games. And then that was just the backs that were just walking out. And then the forwards came out and the lads were like, oh my God, like they're big. And then we played a game against them. And like, you know, it's like we were like no one had an interest at all about this unofficial game. And then we started playing and they were full on tackling everyone. Lads were sore. It was like a Monday morning. Wayne Barnes was refereeing and one of the scrums, he put the ball in and England got marched back like 10 metres. Then there was another scrum in front of the post. Wayne moved it to the side of the post for fear of safety of our players that were going to get hit against their own post. That's when you know you're in a bad day. And they scored a try off that, penalty try. We had to... George Ford had to drop a goal just to get us on the scoreboard, and we lost 7-3 in a game. But they like
Leeds Met beat us once.
What happened
at training? Leeds Met ran riot
against England. Yeah. Why has no one like uncovered a Leeds Met player?
They'd been on the smash the night before, apparently, and then they came
Portugal?
And trained against
the lads. Do you remember
Portugal
in Browns?
Yeah.
Oh, that was close as well.
So the theme is you just consistently got turned over in training.
Yeah. It's tough to get yourself up for
interest
those kind of
levels,
games. But the Georgians,
the
no way.
Yeah.
Oh, good stuff, guys. And then to finish, seen these law changes? 20-minute red cards? Yes or no?
20-minute red cards?
Is it happening or just being discussed?
Well, there's some things that are definitely happening. And this is not good for box-kicking nines. Referees, and what I hear is the Prem refs didn't quite enforce it.
Well, Marla was stood there doing the countdown.
Yeah, well,
I think they
said we're not going to do that, but they're really trying to crack down on you guys at the back of the ruck.
Yeah.
With caterpillars.
Or not?
You notice that they're hurrying you up more, but it's generally quite hard sometimes because the ball's trapped in the ruck. Without going in there with your hands, it's really hard. And then obviously the ball's out if you play with your hands. It is hard to get it back in the time. So I think teams will get caught out with it. I think they will. But I think the refs are saying once the ball is available and it's not trapped, then you've got 5 seconds.
So it could be 5 seconds rolling, 5 seconds.
Yeah. We thought that someone might get done this weekend.
But they did.
We talked about it.
They moved it a bit quicker.
Yeah, we talked about it so we wouldn't get done. And touch wood, we didn't.
So that's one of the ones that definitely come in, Ashley. And then a few others are being recommended, kind of the DuPont law, the removal of the scrum option from a free kick, the croc roll. Then there are closed law trials, protection of the nine. I mean, it's like the goalies in football. Do you need more protection?
Yes,
I'm not sure if you do.
The quarterback. Yeah.
And then little things that they're probably going to work fine about if the lineout's not straight, if the throw's uncontested, just crack on, a bit more shot clock. But then the ones that are really, really kind of game changing, they're setting up working groups to see the feasibility of things like the tackle height, which could be a long way off, but it's certainly on the agenda to lower the tackle height. And then the 20-minute red card, where the carded player is removed for the rest of the game but can be replaced after 20 by a sub.
What if you've headbutted someone?
I think...
Not just a...
Well, it does say global red card trial, but there needs to be a red card that's a red card.
Yeah.
And then this becomes a kind of orange card.
Yeah, because otherwise...
That's not clear in the press release, but you're right. They have to have... Otherwise,
you're giving some lads license to
just take people out, aren't
ice
you?
Ice hockey. Yeah. Gloves
I
off.
Think... just quickly, because we haven't much time. Do you agree with 20-minute reds, or do you think if you just get what is a red card right, then that will change behaviour, even though it's taken a long, long time? That will change behaviour and not ruin matches, because there won't be red cards all the time if... Player, it's when a red card is for an offence that people think is accidental or harsh or borderline. And then
I don't think
player.
Right now the game is as affected at Premiership level. compared to international level if you have a player less. So I think international, yeah, I think it ruins the game if we have a red card.
The Lions beat Connacht away comfortably with 14. But that's because the stakes are a tiny bit lower.
England
would
beat Argentina.
England did beat Argentina.
Card, first minute.
It's easy. The
I think
easy thing is
getting better with 14.
Yeah, they are. Yeah,
but they can they attack the same
but
way.
We changed completely the way we played
against Argentina.
After exactly. That that's the thing.
We had to.
Yeah, that's why I think New Zealand did so well in that World Cup final, despite they still managed to put phases together. It's just teams one man out of your shape probably makes a difference, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think the easy thing is to go, well, you just got to make. You got to make. They've got to make the decisions correct. But there are those ones where it's.
It's still
letter of the law. It's a red, but really, it's not. That's why I think we've all said it. I think more common sense needs to be had on those ones and err on the side of accidental. Or there's a lot of mitigation.
Give a yellow.
Like, don't ruin the game. Like, we want to see competitive games. The right teams winning the games at the end of the day, not because of a red card. But it's a tough old job.
Because you need to also have deterrence, don't you?
Yeah, you do.
Yeah. Good stuff. What does the week hold for you, Ashi? And your advice to Danny is keep playing while you can?
As long as possible.
In fact, I'm asking you what your weekend has in store.
Just making breakfast is a hassle.
Well, because previously you just leave for training.
Just making eggs is a hassle.
Does Melissa still do your eggs?
Well, that's another problem. No, not necessarily.
So you're not having to contribute much more to the family dynamic rather than just... God. Just leave for training.
Do you do all the school runs? Do you do school runs now?
Yeah.
Do you? All time, every day?
When I can, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, most days, if they'll let me take them.
Yeah.
A lot of them are like, no, we want mum. I'm like, all right, okay. I'll make my eggs then.
Yeah.
Yeah, do it as long as you can, mate.
Okay.
So we're going to get another year out of you?
Yeah, I'm not stopping.
You're not stopping this summer?
I'm not stopping.
Good idea.
Mm.
Yeah, as long as the breakfast is still being supplied, mate, I'll keep going.
Yeah.
Okay, cheers everyone.
Cheers guys.
Cheers.
Speak to you soon.
Thanks for downloading Rugby Union Weekly.
For more info,
head to the BBC Sounds app. Sounds app.
Pep Guardiola.
A perfectionist.
A tactical genius.
The best manager of his generation.
The best manager in history.
Reserve team coach Pep Guardiola, a popular former player at the Nou Camp, will take over from Rijkaard.
This is a podcast all about the man who has shaped the modern game.
It feels almost as if he's solved the riddle, if he's cracked the code for football.
From his history in La Masia to dominating football across Europe.
He's brought a brand of football to the Premier League that we've never seen before.
Everybody plays like Pep's teams now.
From football, he takes you to heaven.
From BBC Five Life.
Sporting giants, Pep Guardiola.
Listen on BBC Sounds.